Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
Does your brand stand out from the crowd? It's hard. That's why hundreds of agencies and marketers build their programmatic and native advertising offering with StackAdapt. Visit StackAdapt.com to learn more. Stay tuned to hear StackAdapt's COO Vitaly Pacherski chat with AdExchanger's Zach Rogers about why native is eating display budgets.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the program. My name is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger and your host. My guest, Sean Finnegan, has an amazing breadth of experience in marketing. In kind of preparing for this episode, I was really hard-pressed to figure out what to focus on with this little introduction. He was one of the first people to hold senior digital roles at in the holding company agency world, Omnicom, Starcom. He was chief digital officer at Starcom, in fact. Later on, he founded a consulting firm, C4, which was acquired by Truex, where he became sort of head of sales and marketing. Truex was in turn acquired by 21st Century Fox. Today, he is an advisor to technology firms, publishers, brands, agencies, and others as a partner at the consulting firm Chameleon Collective. He's also a partner at Consciousness Economy, which gets businesses to focus on cause-based things, world betterment, that kind of stuff. Basically, he's done a little bit of everything except, I don't know, maybe actually going to the brand side or something. But I'm really pleased to have him in the studio. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So when I kind of rattle all that off, I'm sure I missed a few things there too, but did you ever expect to do that many things in your career?
You know, it's interesting. First of all, it reminds me of something my 95-year-old grandmother just asked me recently. She just said, so do you have a title or do you have a business card? And you take a look at anyone's career, and people tend to have a different job, even within the same company, every 2 years. Mm. You know, I was with Omnicom a total of 10 years, and every 2 years, there was a different role and a different title, et cetera. And so once I left the agency space 8 years ago, I decided that I wanted to put myself into a position where I worked for myself, but then I provided a variety of services for a variety of different ventures. Mm-hmm. Not to be scatterbrained, because they were focused around, you know, a few core areas. But
why did you want to do that? Why not build a career at the agencies?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and that could have worked. There was a lot of I think I got to a point in the agency world where I had some fun building out different cultures, and through, you know, M&A, for example. I'm so proud of the Resolution Media acquisition that I brought into Omnicom, building OMD out from a local, national to a global basis. Mm-hmm. And I think I got to a point where I wanted to break out and build my own business of me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And not just from a strategic message standpoint, and not from a reputation or connections, but in an actual product, and from the financial, legal, technical aspects to it, to the marketing and promotion of it. But could I've been advising these Fortune 500 companies for so long. I've been building out these units and cultures, but it was always on the back of a larger apparatus and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Could I actually take this out on my own and do it by myself? Mm-hmm. And happy to report 8 years later, having four successful M&As of my own homegrown built solutions, I'm a newfound professional. Mm-hmm. And a little bit more rounded out in areas beyond media. Mm-hmm. Certainly now into the futures, you know, the frontier tech and the AI space, to content development, and then also just business strategy versus just the media element to it. I'm far more versed and more aware of what it, more from an MBA type perspective, what right. it is to run and operate and guide businesses now today.
Yeah, there's always been this kind of uncomfortable tension between agencies and then the consulting need for these large business agencies have always been advisors historically, the creative agencies were advisors to the brands.
Right.
In a way, like, tell me who my customer is. What matters to them?
Right.
Give me advice. That died, and now creative agencies just have big, small or big ideas. And then the consulting firms have emerged, you know, and, you know, there's a sense that agencies are, I don't know how to phrase it, but short-term thinkers help us, like, launch this campaign, help us improve performance next quarter, next year, whereas the consultant has their finger on, like, a longer time wheel. You know, like, how do we reinvent this business? How do we make sure we build a sustainable model or whatever it might be? And you can see the agencies trying to get in on consulting, consultants moving uncomfortably towards agency-like services.
Right. There certainly is that progression. And there's, you know, within the agency world, there's always been the conversation of reintegration of creative and media, for example, tactically.
Do you think that ship has sailed?
No, I don't. I really don't understand a lot of the conversation that's going on these days about even the pressure against creative agencies that you're seeing from the holding company chiefs. I understand the profitability of things, but if I'm going to get any sort of unique value out of a third party, it's going to be on humans and their unique ideas and insights and their translation of that to my brand and services. Mm. How could that be something that, is something that depletes and goes away? On the flip side, you know, on the media side, there certainly is a variety of options for, in addition to, working with the agencies, there are a lot of third-party solutions that are making a lot of headway towards the automation and certainly starting with programmatic and down to AI and the convergence of the two and more. You're starting to see that that progress.
Right.
And at the same time, the consultancies, you know, like you mentioned, the agencies, I think, are hiring people that have actual, you know, brand-based experience that understand the true through-the-line assessment and building out of a brand and being cognizant of that product and the demo and the message strategy and everything that flows from that into the agency process. And then the consultancies, in turn, are hiring some of the agency folks to fulfill some of those creative and media and research needs as well.
You get the sense from the brand's point of view, what some of them would love to see happen is they build up a smart in-house marketing operation that can do hands on keyboard with the DSP and work with a consultant to make sure they get the details right around sort of activating their data, integrating technology.
Right.
And then their agency relationships may be limited to a handful of specialist agencies, traditional or offline agencies, creatives. Mm-hmm. And that the media, they would love to see the media agency layer shrink down. Mm. I mean, it's hard to generalize about the brands as a group. There are thousands of them.
Sure.
But do you think that's a realistic goal for the brand?
I think that there truly is a progression of certain aspects of insourcing going on right now. I could tell you five brands right now that have reached out to me and some of my chameleon partners on putting together architecting plans with which to do so. Now, there's the theory and then there's the practice. And I think that there are certain tactical areas today that probably should be brought into the brand house, areas that are sensitive to first-party data, sensitive to competitive consumer information. And then there's a little bit of a cost and speed-to-market value as well. The zero-sum game of full service in-house, you know, there's some cons to that as well. Yeah, you could start to,
especially if you're based in Cincinnati or something.
Yeah, well, there's geography to it. There's also the one-dimensional focus. A lot of people that are truly creatives like to diversify their portfolio and not necessarily just work on soap.
Yeah, you've never worked in-house at a brand, have you?
Right. No.
And would you ever want to?
I'm not sure. It would where I operate now, I'm having more fun working with for everyone, for brands and agencies, right. Media and tech providers. But yeah. I think that
it speaks to there's a perception at least that there's not, once you're in-house at the brand, there's opportunity to build something, but maybe not blow the roof off kinds of opportunities. You're going to have the satisfaction of a pretty good benefits package and maybe a real generous vacation allotment or something.
That always is the curiosity when any of the agency brethren go over to the brand side. It's, what's it like? What's it like being on the other side, et cetera?
Yeah, stability.
And
for some people that matters. Yes. You got a family.
Yeah.
But you've got a large family.
I do.
And I don't think you haven't chosen stability. You've got seven children.
Thank you.
That's amazing. Sorry, I just outed you as a father of seven kids. But I think that's incredible.
People know that. I think that it's always my my little pub trick is to have people guess how many kids Melody and I have. But there is stability, or maybe there's the perception of it.
Yeah.
And – but truly in this day and age, and I wonder sometimes to myself whether I'm being, talking into an echo chamber or if it's a reflection of the larger industry progression, but I think that stability is dependent upon yourself and where you can become, not to become sounding like a coach type person here, but philosopher, but where your gifts are, what are you good at, what are you not good at, where your passions are, and where there's a business, all those operating in three parts, translating that to where, to a career and to a profession. Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to
cut you. No, it's okay. I think since I've started that 8 years, I think it would probably be difficult to reintegrate into a larger operation.
And, right.
Never say never.
Another factor challenging the sort of insourced marketing folks is that if you get smart enough, passionate enough, if you develop a vision around technology and data, you tend to get poached. I mean, you see an opportunity, you'll get involved in a startup. I don't know how many people Google has hired from the brand side, but it's a lot. And do you think there's a brain drain, a talent drain that happens there when people realize we're living through a period of immense opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
And when they start to see that, something clicks and then they go work for a DMP or whatever.
I do see that. I do see the progression of anybody that actually truly creates a product or service that has expandable value into one of the large companies, the duopoly, et cetera, that they take them out and there's an acqui-hire that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Google and Facebook and increasingly Amazon and Netflix and Apple just sweep up any and all comers that they believe may either propose an opportunity or represent themselves as a threat.
Can like a Kellogg's or ConAgra hope to compete with that kind of just immense hunger for talent on the data side that the technology companies obviously have and they're willing to spend for it? I mean,
yeah, well, then you have to wonder, do you want to bring or could you even bring the immense size and scope of what those tech companies offer inside of a particular company and brand? Or is it better leveraged externally? And should your talent focus on the true creative strategic architects of cereal or a CPG in general?
Mm-hmm.
And those people may not want to go to Facebook or Google. Frankly, I don't know what those people would do at Facebook or Google anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They have tens of thousands of engineers and they have an amazing engine of search and automated returns and social that I sometimes am confused by what the strategic deliverable is from their side to a brand besides here's your target and we're going to deliver a search return or a button to the end of it.
So let's talk about the duopoly. and what value they deliver, and in exchange for the incredible scads of money that they get from those brands. Because that's an interesting insight. Like,
right.
Are brands really getting their money's worth out of these two companies that receive 80 to 85% of their budgets in digital?
Boy, it's a good question. And you wonder about some of these conversations that are being had in the social impact, you know, and whether they should be treated as content providers or utilities, and should they be regulated, broken up, et cetera. And also then your mind wanders to what's next? What's the next platform? I mean, I've been in the business now for nearly 25 years, all of it in digital. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the waves of platforms from, the closed garden, walled gardens of, I'm really going to date myself here, but CompuServe, Prodigy, AOL, and then to the launch of Netscape, and then the rise of Yahoo, and then search and social and programmatic and data, mm-hmm. and whatever we're on the verge of today. What will be the next platform that will take on or be a competitive threat or in addition. Now, to your question in terms of the services and the differentiation that they provide, honestly, it's quite confusing to me at times.
It's pretty easy to see what YouTube can do from a video, sight, yeah. sound, and motion point of view. That's exciting. And I don't want us to spend the rest of this episode kind of like going through each of the platforms
right.
that Facebook and Google control. But, I mean, it's clear that they've kind of run away with the prize over the last 5 to 10 years. Now, there is a sense that there are sort of up-and-comers that could eventually surpass them. Is Amazon's data set better than Google's search set from a brand or consumer intent point of view? And you could argue it is.
100%. And then you start to look at their foray into the physical space with Whole Foods, with Washington Post. You know, you start to that starts to intrigue me a little bit more, honestly. Though I have a digital background, I love and increasingly become more interested when tech products and solutions start to look at consumers more holistically and realize that we're not just found at the end of our phone on a search element or a typical social network, but we're immersive in all aspects of our lives. And there are a variety of ways to deliver editorial and product information as well. That's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that sense that like, these companies have grown immensely based on our addiction to their products.
Mm-hmm.
They've so far done very well just by optimizing for addiction. You know, and that's been a culture. I feel like 2018 has been a year when there was like a big record scratch and everybody was like, wait a minute, we're right. actually kind of victims of some of these apps.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And, you know, you look at you mentioned my children. I have basically an in-house test and control study of social media.
It's a pretty big focus.
Group. Yeah. And I actually have our oldest four, we have four businesses that we're launching with each one of them in a variety of areas from sports and analytics to fashion and production. So,
what, really?
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good way to get to force your way as a parent into your kids' lives is to
great.
Give them the allure of money.
Right, and to act as an angel to your own offspring.
Yeah, well, I own 99%. They haven't woken up to that part.
don't tell them.
But, you know, you look at their behavior and their friends, and I'm surprised, I don't know why I am, but a lot of them are just going cold turkey on certain aspects of social. They just delete it from their phone. They one of my daughters said to me recently, I saw that she was off of Instagram, and she just said, I felt like it was had too much control over me. I needed to put it away.
Hmm.
And a lot of them are into the messaging apps and more, but which is another avenue that I think is continuing to grow. But if you start to segment this from a demographic perspective and an age break, et cetera, that you can start to feel like, I don't know what it is, but something new is coming. And even though Facebook, for example, has made some amazing acquisitions in Instagram and certainly WhatsApp, there seems to be more coming. And if history repeats itself from every 5 to 7 years of new platforms, or we're going to soon be learning about who those players are.
The pendulum is swinging back away from just continuous phone use towards something that may be a little more intelligent. Yeah. What will that mean for advertising? That's a whole big question. We're going to take a moment's break, though, and hear from a sponsor. And I'll be right back with Sean. I'm here with Vitaly Pacherski, co-founder and COO of our sponsor, StackAdapt. Vitaly, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what is StackAdapt?
So StackAdapt is a pioneer in programmatic native advertising. So we're one of the first companies that coined the term programmatic native, basically blending a channel for distribution of content and merged it with real-time bidding technology. And now we operate as a demand-side platform, primarily powering agencies and brands with a content-driven advertising.
All right, great. And what's your customer use case?
Yeah, so primarily we support agencies in about 80% of the cases, and the remaining 20% are brands directly who have internal teams to operate software like ours. Nowadays, we see more and more agencies starting to build out their media offering. So we see a lot of agencies who historically have been social agencies or digital or content marketing agencies starting to build out these programmatic and media teams. And they naturally gravitate to this low frequency type of software like StackAdapt.
Okay, great. And what's on your product roadmap?
So historically, we've been really focused on automation and machine learning. So we've always seen StackAdapt as just being a platform that you can turn on to drive more customers or distribute content. Now we're trying to break walls, as we call them, and just offer more flexibility from customers to operate our software. So things like bid factoring, dynamic creative optimization, PMP marketplaces, finding that blend between automation and control from the teams that operate the software.
All right, super. Thanks for your support.
Thanks.
Okay, and I'm back with Sean Finnegan. And hey, one thing I forgot to mention at the beginning of my little bio of you you have an event that you run called The Room.
Mm, yes.
Can you talk just a little bit about what's the deal there?
Absolutely. This has been a passion project. It's been a lot of fun to launch as part of Chameleon, which I'm a co-founder and partner of, and which we launched about 3 years ago. 1 year ago, working for a variety of media and technology companies and certainly staying very connected with my brand and agency friends, I took a look at the industry event space, and not that I was going to create some sort of antidote for it or killer, but I just said, what do I like about it? Why do people make the effort to travel and attend these? And I also did simultaneously attending a few large events, realized that there was a huge disparity in the ratio of buyers and sellers, if just to put them into two buckets real quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of events companies or the trade organizations are just selling to anybody that will buy a sponsorship. And what's happening is there's just been an overrun of the sellers, and they're not getting value out of it. The brands, whom I know well from serving for 15 years on the agency side, they're there to learn, they're to debate, to actually meet other people of their ilk, maybe in a non-competitive set. Mm-hmm. They actually do want to meet the marketplace. They want to have a sensible conversation with a new technology or media company and understand they're off campus so they can have a little bit more mind share. And
they just want them to be on leashes. This is for brands only? Is that the idea?
It's primarily brands, but the agencies are involved, absolutely.
Okay. How do you make money? Is it just ad sales, ticket sales?
So no subscription. We have we do this on a weekly basis. There's one private room. There's 15 total people. We have one underwriter, single source and exclusive sponsor. We have 10 brands that represent it. We have one particular piece of content that we debate for a few hours. And so there's connectivity, there's content, and then if they get to know the underwriter, then eventually there's commerce.
Okay, interesting. Cool. Well, best with it. So we were having a really macro conversation a moment ago about the big platforms and what they're doing to our brains and how that touches on advertising. But I think there's another big question I'd like to ask in the time we have left around advertising and its reputation in the culture. I think you could make a case that advertising is more prevalent now than it's ever been in the history of civilization. Agree? Disagree? Yeah.
I think it has been, and it's never been more prevalent and irrelevant at the same time, just because of the tonnage of it. I mean, we're growing smart humans, but we can only process so much messaging on a interaction or per daily basis. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Truex earlier, and not to give them a commercial, but their premise was on exclusive engagement. Mm-hmm. And then the model overall on engagement is, how do we have fewer ads? Yes, there will be a premium as a result of it, but you'll have time and attention. So this focus on the attention economy, I think, really needs to come to the forefront. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as far as the reputation of advertising, I always joke that I entered the ad industry because I never liked advertising. And if I could do some sort of impact to it to make it a likable entity, I would deem it a success. But I still think today, one of the things, I had this conversation with a brand today that we were at the forefront of the online advertising industry so many years ago. And we, if you remember, just to monetize this new platform, we created these buttons and banners, which were designed as placeholders to run messages in and generate revenue. Well, you would have thought by 2018 that innovation would have allowed for those to be extinct and for more endemic, innovative solutions to have taken their place. But enter into even programmatic and more, the automated ability to deliver these things, they're even more prevalent than before. Mm-hmm. So they're just delivering this crazy amount of messaging, and I think it's a problem. I think that advertisers and brands really need to take a look at their portfolio of spending. And first of all, not to contradict myself, but to break out of just the duopoly and be more diverse in their editorial set. And two is spend more money on fewer executions and work with the publishers on focusing on that time and attention. And the last thing is provide a value to the end user, where I've always believed that the true definition of branding is a consumer's use of the product and not just because they like the creative commercial. Mm-hmm. But, just the proponents of all of the travel apps, et cetera, and the Yelps and of the world, that true branding response to whether you like something or not is what experience you had with it, to what degree, mm-hmm. and not just because you cried over a 30-second spot, and you're never going to cry over a banner. So I think if we could shore up the inventory and the volume of messaging, that the digital vision will finally be paid off on.
Yeah, fascinating, and I agree. And I think a couple of hurdles to that. A lot of us in the industry would like to see brands think about meaningful interaction, spend more money for more impact and more meaning. Unfortunately, we've got something called procurement, and it's driving prices down, and it's turning the media. I don't need to summarize this for you or for the listener, but it's created a kind of a commodity mindset around advertising, and programmatic itself has enabled that, because while the real opportunity in programmatic is to find your audience at the right time, that's actually interpreted by some brands as, well, I can save a lot of money, but if you're saving money by switching from a high impact mid-roll television ad to a super targeted emotionless banner ad while you've failed. And how do we get out of this situation? Right. I mean, what's the solution? Because, you know, the procurement agents, they're just working for someone else who's working for the board, and the board has just been taken over by efficiency-minded investor who doesn't know shit about advertising.
Right. Oh, you can swear on this podcast?
It's okay.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, I didn't know that. You should have let me know.
Sorry, let's start over.
I've got a mouth like a trucker, so. The change belongs in what we're valuing. And if I understand, I remember back in the early days of the media agency, the introduction of procurement into our lives and where they would assess media impressions like the pencils that brands would buy. And if you're truly assessing the proper KPI, which is not about eyeballs and reach, but is on cost per acquisition and lifetime value of a customer, et cetera, then the whole game changes. Then it doesn't matter if you're spending 20 cents or $200 on a CPM. It's through the whole process in line, what is the residual effect to that brand? What money are they taking in on that consumer? If that truly is and should be the focus, then the media upfront media dollar conversation becomes a lot easier. The quality increases, and the lifetime value quality customer increases as well. But everyone's just so fixated on the easy way out, on like I said, the tonnage and the mass dollars and the cheap eyeballs. You look today, you take that $200 CPM, you extract lack of viewability, maybe the fraudulent component to it as well, the size and space and dimensions of whatever you're looking at in terms of what screen, and you assess a value to that, you're going to net down to a $20 CPM. And you can get then, if you're paying for that $200 CPM, you're clearly paying for a more vibrant, innovative, immersive ad that's going to attract and is targeted correctly, and is going to attract a more premium customer, is going to deliver more value down the line. But you're right. It's hard to get people back out of that cheapest option, mm-hmm. and it's going to take a while.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about innovation in advertising technology, marketing technology, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Hmm. Well, I've got two thoughts on that real quick. One is I'm so bored of the what I'm calling the plumbing conversation of our business. You know, you have conversations with brands and agencies and marketing or media and tech, and all we're talking, when you're thinking about how to convince mom to fall in love with a certain solution, all we're talking about are the mechanics and tubes and metrics that deliver that. That's not a strategy. That's a mechanism. Mm. I'm tired of that. I think all the MarTech, ad tech conversations just need to consolidate. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the things I agree with Mr. Khawaja on is when winter is coming to consolidate a lot of these so we can – it's such a commoditized conversation. I wish it would go away. It's boring. I think for the future, where I'm excited about is in the area of AI, of artificial intelligence, and how the use and amount of data can be sizable enough so that these third-party systems can start to think and optimize on their own and be more of an accelerant to a brand and where they should place it. And then also, hopefully, that once that gets solved, we could start to have more of a conversation on the creative impact as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that we're getting to that point. And it's an interesting dynamic, by the way, if I can add this.
Yep.
The human dynamic of this is because I work for a few AI-based companies, and they just freak everybody out because mm-hmm. everyone immediately goes towards robots and job displacement. Mm-hmm. If I've learned anything about the introduction of third-party technologies, whether it's way back when the ad servers came in to mm-hmm. today's AI introduction, it's that they may have replaced actual job functions, but not jobs themselves. New ones have been created. And there are many forecasts out there that say that more jobs will be created as a result of this. Mm-hmm. AI is just taking the place of what can be automated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
including marketing jobs for people who need to think of new things to call AI because the term AI
right.
has been rendered meaningless by the hype around AI, which sometimes it elevates technologies that are not AI necessarily.
We really need a Snopes for the advertising business, because we do a really good job in our industry of taking something, anything that has a vision and a future, and just killing it with hype and overuse and a lot of ignorance.
Right.
There are a series of, I won't name them, but data and technology companies that are telling everyone they're AI-based when they have no basis or foundation with which to prove any of that. Mm-hmm. But they're doing it just because everyone's like, oh, AI. This is, by the way, not to get back to it, but this is why we do The Room, because we debate this for, and we bring in actual technology experts and researchers and engineers to deconstruct mm-hmm. these things and mm-hmm. teach people properly about stuff like this mm-hmm. versus letting everyone just get away with the hype and reality.
Right. Gotcha. Well, that's a, we're going to have to leave it there.
Oh, bummer.
We could go
I didn't swear once.
No, no, you didn't. I'm disappointed. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you, Zach.
Great conversation. Thank you, listener, for tuning in to yet another episode of Ad Exchanger Talks. We'll see you next week.
Next week, tune in to hear more from StackAdapt, the number one and only programmatic native advertising platform with engagement-based pricing, award-winning customer service, and no minimums. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.